It's never too early to start thinking about your branding, because this is where, especially when you're starting out, it's actually a fantastic time, because you can say, well, what do I want my business to be?
Hello and welcome to the Start, Build and Grow podcast. I'm your host, Rob Lawrence, and in this short podcast series, you're going to learn how to run and grow your business more effectively, gaining insights and inspiration from our panel of hand-selected coaches, mentors, and experts in the enterprise community. In the next few weeks, you'll learn things to consider at the start of your business journey, how to run your business effectively, and tips on everything from finance to marketing to managing people and strategy to help you develop and grow a sustainable and profitable business. Before we begin and get stuck in, don't forget to follow and subscribe to this podcast through your favorite podcast player app. Today, we're going to explore branding and how branding and your marketing extend beyond the visuals of your organization to encompass your company values, culture, and customer experience. I have with me today a very special guest from the Business Growth Coaches Network, and it's branding expert Kat Dancy. Kat is an experienced business coach and mentor who specializes in helping people to unite their sales and marketing strategies as part of their overall business plan towards achieving their personal and professional goals. Today, we're going to talk about what branding is and how to develop and improve your brand's credibility. So, Kat, thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Quite excited. It should be talking about a subject that I'm passionate about is always a favorite thing for me to do.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to have you on the show and to tap into some of your experience today. So today we're going to be talking about branding. And for our listener who's most likely starting out in business, perhaps for the first time, or certainly their experience is quite young in terms of running their own business. So I'm kind of keen to tap into your expertise and experience today, Kat. So from a small business point of view, and perhaps from just a general business point of view, what do we mean by branding, or what does branding mean to you, Kat?
If you want to give it kind of a generic term, sort of more the dictionary or a marketeer's term, branding gives meaning to a specific company, product or service. And it is quite a generic understanding or description of what it means. It is designed as a marketing term to kind of be a strategy to help people, customers, other businesses easily identify you amongst the noise or from your competitors, and they can experience the thing that your company does, and it gives them reason to buy from you. Most people think that branding is a marketing term, but actually it can affect and influence the whole way that you can set your stall out in terms of internally with your processes and your work culture, all the way through to your logo and your online presence, or how you market yourself or sell yourself. So it actually is all encompassing, not just a pretty logo on a piece of packaging or on a website.
Yeah, I can relate with that. I think in my earlier business experience days, I perhaps would have thought of branding simply as like a logo or a mark or something like that.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Most people think that branding is a logo or company colours or that side of things, which is kind of sat under the advertising element of it. But if you're starting out your business, you can actually make your whole business your brand. And that actually will set your business apart massively in the competition, especially if you want to get people to understand your business and recognise you quite quickly. It's easier to build a following and gain customer trust if they get to know you, which is part of the whole branding side of things, in my terms anyway.
So it sounds like it's very much related to the identity of the business and those within the business. Would that be true?
It is. And obviously, corporate identity or business identity is another marketing subject in itself. But for me, it actually is the brass tacks of, well, actually, what is it like to work at the company? What does your company stand for? So if you look at personifying your company, your business, who is your business? What, not just what you do in terms of the products or services that you provide, the thing that you do, it's how you do it. So it's a case of, how do you recruit? How do you train your employees? What are the processes you have in place? Do you have a vision, a mission, and the values that go with that? And all of that incorporates into the brand. So say, for example, there's a brand that we all really trust and we like. I'm going to use one of my favourite brands, Ben & Jerry's. Love ice cream, as it is. But we know that they stand for ethical sourcing of their products, their raw ingredients, and they want to make ice cream in an ethical, sustainable way. So we buy into what that brand is about. But when you actually look inside the company, that stems from how they actually purchase, how they communicate with their staff and employees, and it's the overall welfare, sustainability and caring. So the whole values are summarised in their vision and their mission and also their branding. Just as an example, and any business can do this. So get a blank piece of paper, and if you're going to write what is my or who is my business and what do we believe in and how do we want to be seen, just write it on a blank piece of paper, and that will help you create your brand. But also from a company point of view, from an employee in point of view, you can attract the right people because you can find people who've got shared values with yourself. You've got people who are striving to work towards the values and the branding that you've set. So it means that you get better staff engagement and motivation. You wouldn't think that the concept of branding, which we all think of as a logo, can actually be as deeply ingrained as employee satisfaction and motivation and engagement. And from starting out as a business, you want to have the right people and the right talent in to help you grow. So thinking about who you are as a business, if you were making it into a person, can also help with your marketing element of it in terms of how you communicate. What kind of words do your business say? How do you say it? We have certain brands which are quite comedy on their social media side of things, others which are really professional. What's your tone of voice? If you're going to create a business avatar, what is that? And that also then helps with going back to the internal element of your business, how you actually treat employees, how you manage them, how you can put in place elements to get further engagement and loyalty. We've all heard of big corporate businesses like eBay and Google having playrooms and chill out zones for their staff. That's taking it to like a big corporate degree. But ultimately, it's about how their kind of branding is, well, we work hard and we play hard. And it's there to attract the best talent. You can do the same on a smaller scale for a business that's just starting out. More people you can have who are on board about what you want to achieve, the likelihood of success massively improves and inflates.
Wow, there's so much more to it than I thought.
You know, it's massive, isn't it? Branding, you wouldn't think it's so deeply ingrained.
Well, it is. And some of the things you're speaking to there very much remind me of the culture within an organisation and within a business, and knowing how important culture is for any business, and it perhaps being the number one priority in this day and age for any business is to get clear on what their culture is for their organisation and who they are, the way they do things, how they want to be in the world. And you were talking also there about how this fits into their sort of systems and their processes and perhaps their back-end thinking. So I'm fascinated here about how branding can kind of find itself so deeply ingrained into a business from what you're saying.
Well, say, for example, you want to set your brand to mention the quality and the service side of things that you offer to your customers. Because if you're going back to the basics, it's what is the meaning of the company's products and services so a customer can easily identify you. If you're setting your stall out that we provide quality products or quality service, well, how does that relate to the processes internally? So if it's a quality product, you're getting a huge amount of product returns. Let's say you're making a physical widget and selling it, but you're getting a huge amount of customer returns because the product is failing. Well, that is in conflict against the quality element of the brand that you've put out into the marketplace, which means that that quality element is not being managed internally. So what is causing those quality failures within the business? Is it the fact the raw materials aren't the correct ones? So therefore you need to go back and work with your suppliers so your suppliers understand what your requirements are? Is it the actual processes of how you create the widget? There's somewhere along the line that it's not working and mistakes are happening, but not being rectified at the same time. So when you are having a brand, which is, say, use quality, is not being reflected on the experience that the customer's having, that actually has to relate to what actually is happening internally. The same if you use something like quality in terms of a service that you're providing as your thing. If a customer is waiting on hold for 45 minutes to an hour, that's not providing what is perceived as a quality service. And when they get hold of somebody or a representative from your business and they aren't getting an expected level of service or conversation or support that they require, well, your branding as being a top-notch service provider is actually diminishing quite quickly. So then that goes back down to, well, what's causing these problems in terms of, do we have enough staff? Are calls not being answered correctly? If they're not, how do we train staff? So then you can go back to the training and getting that engagement. And again, looking at the processes of what is causing those problems. So what you don't want with your branding is mixed messaging. So if you've put your business down as a person, we're going to be like this, we're going to be offering our thing to be delivering this to our customers, yet the customer experience is very, very different, that's where your brand and your business organisation is in conflict. So this is where your brand can actually drive through behaviour change within your organisation or your company.
Wow. So, yeah, I can see now actually how branding, again, I think for many, myself included, you would think of branding as being an external facing thing, but it can also be an internal facing thing. And all of a sudden, my mind's going along the lines of, you think about employee retention, you think about people buying into the company's values, to your earlier point there about vision and values. Again, it's a cultural thing.
It is.
It's a really interesting thought that branding could apply or is just as important to those that work within an organization as it does to potential customers and existing customers and those that like to buy from you. So I guess with that in mind, Kat, what I'm curious to know is how soon do you need to start thinking about this stuff? If you're just starting out in business, you might have some idea about your product or service. At what point do you need to start thinking about your branding, and what's the right way to go about it in your experience?
Oh my goodness, there's lots of different ways to go about branding, but it's never too early to start thinking about your branding, because this is where, especially when you're starting out, it's actually a fantastic time because you can say, well, what do I want my business to be? And this is where your personification can come into it. So if you're starting out your business and you've got this blank sheet of paper and you don't have additional baggage or issues that you need to sort out, you can go, okay, how do I want my business to be perceived in the marketplace? What's my differentiation? Then you can look at things such as, well, how are we going to achieve that? So it actually becomes a full strategy. So you then take that back to, well, if you are looking at your vision, where are you going to be in 3 years' time? How are you going to get there? Is your vision to be the best service provider for the thing that you're doing? If so, how are you going to do that? And this then can come back down to your branding. And then, okay, I'm going to digress. So when most people are starting up the business, they go, brilliant, I've got a business. Right, let's get online and design a logo. That is normally the first thing that a lot of people do when they go into business. They think about that logo, that name, get a website done. But ultimately, it's a case of, is that actually reflecting what your business is going to be? So for me, the first starting point, if you are on those early stages, is to actually look at the vision, the mission, the goals, the values that you want your business to have. And then that can be then become your branding, because you can then take out those key words, those key elements to help then create a logo, get your name, look at the content then of what you're going to be putting on your website, because you can then demonstrate and show those features and the benefits of what your business is actually about. And then if you do need staff to help your business grow, you then start from the training from day one. This is what this business is about. These are our key values. This is how we want you to work. So from that very, very early concept stage, branding should be there, really, and not just seen as a logo. It's the whole thing. Because if you're getting people to work with you for the first time, they want to know who you are, what you do, what you represent, and what they're going to get out of that experience, whether that also be customers or staff. So let's make that impression from the very first time someone gets in contact with you to be the one that you want. So branding right at the beginning, and it's really good for startups because you can include it all from that very first piece of blank page of paper.
It makes a lot of sense. And I love this idea of beginning with the brand in mind. So right from the very beginning of starting out a business with a new product or service, actually thinking about the branding from day one. I'm probably guilty of this, but I'm sure there are many people out there that think of branding as an afterthought. It's something that comes after marketing, which comes way further down the line for many young organizations, I'm sure. But this is some compelling ideas here, Kat. I love this. This is really nice to start thinking about this, you know, this bigger vision here, the bigger design, starting from there. Because I guess this is one of those things that you can iterate, isn't it? On your journey, you can forever evolve it as your business grows and as you perhaps add more services and products. And as the markets change, I guess you're probably going to want to adapt your branding appropriately, perhaps not too often, but this is something that is also worth thinking about.
Absolutely. Branding does evolve and it does change because obviously one of the things that is a marketing element to branding is communication and your tone of voice, how you communicate with the customers, the messages that you give to your customers. There are many examples of big corporations who've got their branding horribly wrong and have had to go back and redo it. Let's take Coca-Cola from when they introduced New Coke back in the 80s. And it was a horrible flop because they were losing market share to Pepsi. So they decided to get rid of the original flavour and put in a new flavour. After 3 months, they buckled in because they didn't listen to consumers. They were arrogant enough to think that customers would just go with the flow. They didn't. The whole branding around changing Coca-Cola meant that they had to go back to their original recipe. And now it's called Coke Original. And the offshoots from that are obviously now Diet Coke, Coke Zero, caffeine-free Coke. So big Coke companies can get it horribly, horribly wrong. But what you have to do is go, actually, if that hasn't worked and we haven't listened to the customer, we haven't stuck to our core values of what we're about, then okay, if we've tried it, always put your hand up and go, we made a mistake, guys, and change to where you think you need to be and where you believe you need to be. Ultimately, your customers will tell you whether you've got it right or wrong, and staff will as well. Because if you start getting a very high turnover of staff because the values aren't meeting the expectation and the working practices, you're going to have people leaving. So there are several measures that you can have in place to go, do we need to rebrand?
Maybe we can look at those measures in a little bit more detail there.
Okay. So, I mean, certain things to see whether your measures, sort of your branding is working. And say, if you're very, very early stages, you're linking in with your whole marketing campaign. And you can do trials with customers to say, especially if you're doing like logo creation, you can have one go, do you prefer A, B, C or D? Get your customers or people, prospective customers, to give you that feedback to see which one resonates best. Because if you've got, say, 4 different designs and behind those designs, you've got a marketing plan of different types of communication messages, tone of voice, colours, whatever the values you've attributed to that, you can see which one actually resonates with your target market. Because a lot of logos are confusing. People actually don't know what it means. Does it represent your company? Or have you just got a logo for having something to put on your letterhead straight away? What does it stand for? So that's one kind of measure. And then if we're looking at branding as the holistic term in terms of the values of your business, you can see whether it is working by, as you say, how your employees relate to your business and respond to your business. So if you end up starting with high absenteeism, high turnover of staff, product quality or the quality that's being delivered is on the decline, where's the mismatch? What's going on? So you will then need to have a look behind the scenes to see whether, well, this is what we've said we want the business to be and how people are working, what's gone wrong? So you can actually realign internally as well when you start to see these measures or these identifiers saying that something's not working right. Because if you're saying that we want to be a fluffy, caring or ethical organisation, yet you're expecting your employees to work 14 hours a day for 8 hours pay, that doesn't reflect what you're saying you are to the reality. Those are an extreme example, but it is worth looking at, well, actually, where do we have mismatches and what's not working and what do we need to do to get everything back in alignment?
Yeah, it's a great point there about mismatches and that integrity and congruency that you're talking about there in terms of actually saying what you are, and to your earlier point about behaviours, actually reflecting that thinking as well. So you mentioned some of the challenges earlier, and I was going to ask you about what sort of mistakes do you see folks making with their branding? And I guess one of those things is not thinking about it at all. And then another one of those is actually, even though you may have put quite a lot of thought into your branding, actually making sure that's coming through every aspect of your business, to your point now about sort of behaviours and the way you treat people, the way you treat customers, the way you respond to things, the way your processes work and all the rest of it. Anything around the sort of challenges and the mistakes that you can think of, that is there anything else around the sort of challenges and the mistakes side of things that you see businesses, you know, large and small making, that businesses starting out could avoid?
Oh my goodness. There are loads of mistakes because ultimately a lot of businesses see marketing as a separate entity. My view of marketing, it's just actually that voice of what your business is about. When you have a marketing strategy that is completely separate to the rest of the business, that's where mistakes start happening. Say, for example, oh my goodness, there's just loads of different examples I'm trying to think of relevant, but say you were a transportation company, you ran minibuses and your service was exceptional, your buses were clean and tidy, and actually the customer experience was very different. Buses were always late, they were dirty, you know, that obviously hadn't been cleaned for a while, the drivers were rude. That is not reflecting what your messaging is about. So this is where you actually need to have a look at what is the marketing effort actually doing, and is that in alignment? And that's often where branding goes horribly wrong, because people put marketing as a separate entity rather than actually a reflection of what the business is about. Often you can see this just on a low-key level with businesses that I've worked with and for, where they've got salespeople out and about seeing customers who have been taught and trained their sales technique, how to sell on features and benefits. Yet the marketing collateral, that could be brochures, what's done on the socials, websites, actually doesn't align with it at all. So when customers are going, well, hang on, the salesperson's told me this, but your brochure says that, you start leading into confusion. That happens more frequently than I care to admit and have seen up until recently on a daily basis, where what a salesperson is telling you versus what the marketing collateral is telling you. And the last thing you want is for customers to be confused. In this day and age where information is so easy to get, you need to make sure that the sales effort and the marketing effort are in alignment. Often some of that is down to marketing, again, being treated as a separate entity to the business, and marketeers will judge their performance on statistics. How many hits have we had on our website? What kind of impressions have we got on our social media posts? What engagement have we had on our socials? As opposed to actually what a customer's saying about you. So just sending out a little survey form every now and again doesn't really reflect that true opinion of what customers will have about you as a business. And again, this is a big, big mistake. So if you do have salespeople or customer-facing people in your organisation, which I'm assuming everybody does, because otherwise, you know, it's difficult to make sales if you don't have someone talking to customers, actually use that knowledge that's there every day, speaking with customers day in, day out, and use that information that is gathered. There'll be tons of it to then work in alignment and in association with the marketing. So it means then the messaging can come out correct, and that people then have that trust and understand the value of what you're doing as a business. So you might, again, as a consumer, dealing with sort of the big corporations where they said, yes, we care about our customers, yet you're on hold for 45 minutes and you get hold of somebody, they just seem disinterested. Again, that's a mismatch. Whereas actually, why is that person disinterested on the phone? Well, you could be the 100th call you've had that day of complaining because something has gone wrong. So there's lots of mismatches and challenges that a young business can have. But ultimately, it's looking at getting all the elements of your business to align. So if you say you're going to be good at service or you're a quality product, how are you going to do that? And making sure that it's done continuously so the customer sees those benefits. And from a marketing department, they need to actually be really close to those customers. Not just check on statistics, but actually go and talk to customers, see the impact that their brochure, social media has. Because if you get no likes and you get no impressions, well, you know the post has failed, but you won't necessarily understand the reasons why. So this is where you can utilise your sales team or customer service team, if you have one, to get that information to make your communication to the wider world more effective. So that's one challenge.
Lots in there, Kat.
There's loads in there.
That's really juicy.
It's more than a logo. This is what I keep telling people. It's more than a logo.
So much in there. This is fascinating to me. I mean, there's so much as you start to get into this stuff that where you realise actually a lot of this does go on in the world. And I'm sure we can all relate to those experiences where the marketing doesn't align with the product, or, you know, there's been some kind of disconnect or mismatch in our experience here. And I guess we're talking about the customer journey here, really, and or the customer experience in many ways of a brand. And I agree with you. I think my impression with products and services that I've bought in the past, and also being on the inside of an organization, you're absolutely right. There is sometimes this isolation, I suppose, where sales and or marketing are working in isolation from the rest of the culture of the business. And then there's a disconnect, which is then felt by the customers and probably the employees too. And I think it comes back to what we were saying earlier about retention in terms of not just customers, but also for those that actually work for a particular brand as well. So I guess the lessons I'm picking up from you here, Kat, for the small business owner that's starting out today is to be thinking mindfully about a lot of this stuff in terms of what sort of impression are they giving. I loved your idea there, that tip about actually what our customers are saying. I think in this day and age, certainly with social media, we can sometimes sort of pay more attention to what people are saying about our brand or perhaps similar brands or the market that we're in and what people are saying there. So we can actually understand our customers and learn more about what it is that they value and what it is that we could be doing to make that customer experience a better one.
Yeah, absolutely. And things have to be consumer-led because obviously if you're just starting out as a business, we all need customers. We all need more customers because you want to grow. I know this is in a world now where reviews are king. You know, there's so many different review type platforms from Trustpilot to Trusted Tick Box here, and every organization is clamoring for your reviews. Yet, do some people take notice of it? Yes. Is it always relevant to that individual? Whereas with a brand, you've got the physical and you've got the emotional element of what you're saying. So actually, that testimonial, even if you've just got one to say, working with this company was fantastic. They really looked after me. Whatever that testimonial may be, you have one. And it actually, if it's more of an emotional, oh, they really looked after me, I felt really happy, those kind of wording actually can be more powerful than a 4.6 Google review because it makes it relevant. Also, if you can, working really well with a customer, sort of say, look, if you would mind me using it, getting some feedback from you that I can use to let other customers know what your experience was. And then so use a proper name. Don't say like Miss H from Bognor, you know, because that looks a bit made up. So it's actually making your business, humanizing it all. So yes, if you're just starting out and you've only got one customer, build up that relationship so they feel comfortable in saying, actually, this company is amazing. Let's get other people to know about them. And the more type relevant reviews that you can get, which are individual, personalized, will actually help grow your business in terms of getting trust from new customers. Because that's what it's about, isn't it? When you're setting out, is people need to know you, they need to trust you, and then they'll start buying from you. Because if you haven't got any knowing of you, if they don't trust you, they're never going to buy from you. So how do you build trust? And that can be really hard when you're starting out, absolutely. But even just one review of someone who's used the thing that you do or purchased it, and you can say, well, how did you find that experience? I want to learn. That customer will feel more valued as well because you're engaging with them on an individual level. To say, look, you know you get a million requests for rating us out of 5. Actually, I want to know how the whole experience was for you, from picking up the phone or emailing us or buying on the website. What was it that you really liked? And customers they do like to give opinions if they feel that opinion will be used in the right way, not just to add to another Google review score.
Yeah. In my experience, and certainly as a business matures, you can have those conversations, those feedback sessions with customers about what you feel, you know, asking your customer what, in their opinion, they feel you're doing right, what you could be doing more of, what you could stop doing, and what it is that they like about working with you. And I love that tip there, Kat, about actually capturing testimonials from the very beginning. And I think it's one thing to capture them, it's another thing to actually put them somewhere as well, like on your website. So that's certainly where I've struggled in the past. I've certainly got many, but I can't say I've used them all. And to your point there about developing trust and credibility, that could be a really quick win from the very beginning, and not being frightened to ask for them as well. So if somebody does give you a sort of the impression that they've had a good experience with you, to ask for that in a more formal manner.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where the kind of the trust and relationship element of a business when you're first starting out, nobody knows you, nobody knows what you're doing. So how do you get that message out there? There are very few markets out in the world which are completely unique. There's normally someone doing exactly the same somewhere else. So how do you get your voice heard? And this is part of the branding element, is getting your voice out there. So not just looking at the internals and your structure through your vision, mission, values, and what are called the employee engagement work processes element. It's then using the brand in the right way so that people know what they're going to deliver. You've set an expectation and you're actually achieving that. And that's where your testimonials will reinforce to help you get that trust, which will then be like an attraction beacon, really, for other potential customers. Because you can say from a sales perspective, well, customer with a very similar business to you used us and they benefited because of X, Y, Z. You can use testimonials in almost in when you're doing the features and benefits of working with your customer as part of a pitch. I hate the phrase sales pitch, but when you're having an exploratory conversation with a prospect, you can actually say, yeah, customers with very similar businesses to you have used us. This is the benefits that they've had. So you can use those testimonials as part of everyday conversation.
Yeah. So a number of dots are starting to align and join up for me now in this conversation. I love how we've gone from branding, you know, just sort of the high level idea of what branding could be, to personifying your business and making it more human. This is where we've got to now. And I love this. And I completely get what you're saying about how testimonials and reviews can help other people understand whether you are somebody that a new customer might want to buy from or invest in. Because I think my experience of reading a review or a testimonial is I can actually imagine myself experiencing that experience, if you like, and that can help me qualify whether this is something that I want to buy. So I love your point there, Kat, about humanizing your brand through that process of capturing reviews and testimonials. I would just love to ask your opinion on also case studies and that kind of thing. And I appreciate that might be something that comes further down the line as a business matures, but what's been your experience with case studies?
I've done a lot of case studies because my background was in construction. So case study marketing is key when you're talking about sort of you want to show off how amazing your product is and how you've built the most amazing thing ever or been a part of it. So because I've got that technical background, case studies are really, really important in terms of showing the from a specification point of view to the end result to you're hitting the KPIs that the clients are looking for. You can go into more detail in a case study than in a testimonial. All a case study is a long form testimonial. Let's be honest, it's a long form testimonial. And you can cover a lot more in terms of what problems your or sort of gaps that your client customer was experiencing, how you went about solving that problem with your thing that you do and what the end result was. And also the process in between from them deciding to go with you to actually using your thing and actually then what the outcome and the benefit now they've used your thing has done for that business. You can go into a lot more detail in a case study and you can actually use a case study to highlight the whole customer journey that you can provide for your customers. So you've got all those different touch points from how they found about you, what it was like dealing with you as a company and the people within your organization, if you've got technical expertise, how that has been imparted to them to give them that support or whatever support you've offered and or provided. So you can actually go into a lot more detail, which from a case study point of view, when a prospect, looks at a case study, they can see where the value of dealing with you is. And you can use case studies, again, from day one. As long as you've got one customer that you can work with, talk to, and use them and that experience. A lot of customers like being involved in case studies because sometimes customers have never seen their name in print. And actually, it gives them a feel-good factor because if they're using your product slash service for their business or to improve their environment, then they can then use that to then promote what they're doing as well. And even if it might be to their families and friends, if it's a consumer, if it's another business, they'll say, hang on, our project was good enough to be featured in a case study. So you can almost use repetitive marketing from that point of view in terms of recommendations. I haven't ever had a customer say no, they don't want to be involved in a case study, as long as they can have the copy that they can use as well.
So that's got me thinking now. There's a number of thoughts off the back of that, and I'm glad I asked because I think on the one hand, what you said a moment ago about a case study being like a longer form testimonial, and that gives me the idea that actually this could be quite a useful asset or piece of collateral that could be used as part of your sales process. So it might be something that you can introduce to a very interested customer, perhaps a little bit further down the line, if they're showing interest into your business and they're willing to invest a bit more time to learn more about you, the products and services and the culture and the brand. So there's that thought on the one hand. Another thought that came along with that is you want to be capturing this stuff as you go. So it's probably going to be useful to sort of have these thoughts that you're sharing, Kat, on your radar at all times, because you might spot an opportunity that's worth capturing, maybe I'm thinking of a project, for example, and your background in construction, I imagine that it'd be really useful to get pictures and sort of like a timeline of how things evolve as part of that project, so that rather than trying to capture that stuff at the end of the project, which is sometimes hard, if not impossible to do.
It is really difficult to do. I mean, we've all seen it sort of even on our own socials through TikTok or Instagram, where people are just from a DIY point of view. Someone's got, you know, a room that's looking a bit tired, and then they'll show you, you know, quick video of the room, the before. And we all like a before and after, don't we? Let's be honest.
We love those. Yeah.
So if there is something that's an interesting project that's coming up, especially if it is something, I couldn't say construction related, or where you can actually see a very key transformation, that is a really good way to show how your product actually delivers that value that you say it does, because people can see it before their eyes. We've all, even from, you know, within the health industry, a lot of gym owners, personal trainers, and slimming dietitians do the before and afters. Showing a transformational journey is actually a really good way to show what you do benefits.
Yeah, that's really great. You're showing the journey, you're demonstrating the journey. And I love that contrast and that idea. You're absolutely right, Kat. We do love a before and after. So that's something, again, our new business owner could be thinking about. What examples of those could you give? And as you're working with customers, what could you be capturing that could be really useful for you in terms of your future branding and marketing? The other thought that came to mind just a moment ago that you shared, which I thought was brilliant, is the fact that customers love to be asked about that sort of thing. I think people do like talking about themselves, and people
do
kind of show themselves off. But I think many smart customers would also realize that's also advertising and marketing for them too.
Absolutely.
And it's at somebody else's expense. So I think there's a win-win to be had there. And again, I think for anyone that might be thinking, well, I'm a little bit hesitant to take up my customer's time, actually there is a big benefit to them being featured in a case study too. So that was a really inspiring thought there, Kat.
Yeah, it is. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? A customer says, no, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be involved. Okay, fine. I really understand that. I just thought that this was amazing what we've done together, and I just wanted to share that with the world. But if you're not comfortable with it, not a problem, you know, and you just move on.
They'd probably be flattered to be asked anyway.
Absolutely. So what is the worst thing that can happen? Someone says no. Okay, well, you just move on to the next customer. But it needs to be, again, if you're just starting out, part of this culture in terms of this branding. So you want to open communication as part of your branding. So customers, you know, they will talk to you, you can talk to them. So you can make this kind of feedback flow just natural from day one. So the expectation of from your staff, from your business, is that if there's something, you know, talking to a customer, oh, how did we get on? Would you like to give us a testimonial or a review? But, and if they say no, then fair enough. But make it an engaging way that they can give a review. They don't have to fill a form in, because if you send a form out, majority of people don't want to fill it in. We get form overloads or pop-up box on your email overloads.
Yeah.
So how are you going to get your customers to engage in that way? And it's just another form of keeping that relationship open, but make it meaningful is all I'm going to say to anyone just starting out.
That's great. Kat, the time is whizzing by here.
I know, so it's gone so quickly.
I've got a couple of more questions I'd love to ask you as we go into the close.
Okay, far away.
So firstly, have you got any more thoughts or tips that you haven't shared today around branding that you would love to share with our listener?
Oh my goodness, hints and tips. It's basically, as a business owner starting out, what are you comfortable with? Yes, we all like to stretch ourselves. But if you, your business, when we talk about the personification, what does your business stand for? How is it going to speak? And if you write something down which you don't believe in, it's never going to work. So basic tip for me is do something that you believe in. Create that voice, that message, the person that you want your business to be perceived as. That's something that you truly believe in. Because otherwise you're going to get mixed messages and misalignments all the way through as you're growing. And if something doesn't feel right, change it. Have a look and to see why it doesn't feel right and then change it. Have the confidence to do that. So that's kind of like another tip. But also more importantly, talk to your customers. They will tell you what's right and what's wrong.
And just on that very quickly, Kat, what do you think is a really good question to be asking a customer to get the sort of feedback that we've been talking about today?
There's loads of questions.
Put you on the spot here.
I know. It's just like, oh no, my head's exploded with all the questions. The first one is, what made you choose us?
Great question.
What made you choose us? Because we've all seen the ones, oh, how did you find us? TV, print, internet. Doesn't really tell you anything. Even though from a marketer, they can then put that lead into that box. Not really that exciting. But if you can actually get an emotional connection from a customer, well, what made you choose us? Well, actually, we chose you because we found you on social media, in print. We saw you in the shop, whatever it may be. You can understand their customer journey, the route that they took to get to you. And it's a great starting question because it's a nice open question. There isn't a yes, no answer. And it doesn't put an answer into a nice little survey box. You're getting emotions out. The more emotions you can understand from your customer, the better you can connect with them.
That's a great insight there alone. Thanks, Kat.
That's all right.
So I've done things a little bit different today. And I wanted to ask you to introduce yourself at the beginning, but it would be great just before we wrap up to learn a little bit more about you. Because you're a business mentor today. So yes. How did you get into what we've been talking about today?
Oh my goodness. Well, I have been in construction sales since the late 90s. I'm that old. And for me, construction and marketing wasn't really sort of, they didn't really go hand in hand a lot. So as a salesperson, I was very much having to create either own marketing collateral or understanding the messages that customers wanted to hear, because it's all about features and benefits selling. And that is a key part of marketing anyway. And obviously, as my career progressed, I've been managing teams, managing people, developing strategies. And I don't like doing work for work's sake or writing a report for report's sake. It's a waste of time, pointless. So I like to see tangible action. And if something isn't working, understand why it's not working and then what you can do about it, whether that would be in a sales perspective, in a customer engagement perspective, in a managing people perspective. If something's not working, why not? And what can you do to change it? Which then led me on to obviously business mentoring and business coaching. My career's evolved just by asking really awkward questions is the honest answer. Really annoying, awkward questions where people have to stop and think and go, right. So for me, to be successful is ask those awkward questions, understand the answers, and then do something about it. It's all about the action.
That's great. That's lovely. Thanks for sharing that little bit of background there, Kat.
That's all right.
It's nice to hear a bit more about the person behind the expertise. So
thank you.
And my final question is, where can people connect with you? They might be inspired by, let's hope they're inspired by today's conversation, and then perhaps want to reach out and connect with you, Kat. Where's the best place to do that?
The best place, obviously, you can always go through BGCN. It's kat@bgcn.co.uk. But I'm also on LinkedIn as Kat Dancy. There aren't many Kat Dancys on LinkedIn, so you should be able to find me. And I'm on Facebook as well as KR Dancy. So you should be able to find me under there.
And that's Kat with a K, isn't it?
It's Kat with a K, yes, K-A-T. And Dancy, D-A-N-C-E-Y. But obviously, send me a message and I would love to connect with you all.
That's brilliant, Kat. And we'll put those links and signposts in the show notes for the listener as well. They're listening today. Thanks ever so much for your time today. It's been great chatting with you about branding.
Not a problem. My pleasure. It's been really enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Start, Build and Grow podcast. And thank you to my guest, Kat Dancy, for sharing her expertise and knowledge with us today. In this episode, we talked about the definition and some of the myths around branding and how branding relates to your company culture. We also talked about the importance of thinking about your branding in the early days and how branding integrates with your marketing. This podcast project has been funded by the UK government through the UK Shared Prosperity Fund and Ipswich Borough Council. Start, Build and Grow is part of the BGCN Group. Discover more business growth, leadership, coaching and enterprise resources at bgcn.co.uk or email us at info@bgcn.co.uk.